you know, how we sort of have the structure. So I think it's worth a little more time than we spent last time. Because that's where, I mean, if we change, we change from that. You know, so.
Yeah, that's why I started with it. And then I said about, then I go into about the change. But you want to sit on this a little longer, let
people... Yeah, I think a little longer so that people understand, you know, what it is we can do and, of course, what we can't do, which is mainly a school. And, but
planning.
We can do most things with this city government, but we can't do the school, of course.
Right.
Property tax.
Well, we can do...
We can do property tax.
I thought we had to have a taxation person with the city to do property tax.
The city may tax up to 20 mils, except for...
Right.
We have, we just, of course, it's a big expensive thing to do because we'd have to have an assessor and
right.
a whole taxing, collecting deal.
Hello, is anybody there?
Paying for it.
Did this a little while ago and then came back on. I just paused.
Still, no, it's not
there.
Okay.
Oh, that's
the recording, I think.
Yeah. Still got the TikTok going, so maybe somebody
I don't know. It can be a little problematic sometimes, so that's why I wanted to start it a little earlier.
Oh, really?
Not muted.
Cruise ship.
Is anybody on the phone line?
Hi there, this is Lynn Keneally with the Local Boundary Commission.
Oh, hi Lynn, this is Karen.
Hi Karen, thanks for helping
thanks
me
for...
get online here.
Oh yeah, thanks for calling in. We're going to get started here shortly.
Okay.
Groovy.
Groovy, yeah. Hey, Lynn, at this end, we have the city administrator, Tom Williams, the mayor, Cal Cassapit, and two council members, Mike Taylor and Susan Warner, and just some people starting to float in now for in public members.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah,
Okay, folks, we're going to get started. Thank you for coming tonight. My name is Tom Williams. I'm the city administrator. And on our panel tonight, we have Mayor Tassifet, we have Vice Mayor Warner, Council Member Taylor, and on the phone from the Local Boundary Commission, we have Lynn Keneally. So tonight we're going to talk about government organization. Why are we talking about this? Well, Hoonah has tried to petition for a borough. This would be their third time. They haven't submitted one yet, but they have been working towards submitting one. In addition, there's been a lot of conversation about how we could improve our schools. And one of the options of doing that is to have our schools be part of the city, not part of a RIA or a rural area school district. And then there's also been some talk about what types of powers does a second-class city have opposed to, say, a first-class city or organized borough. So we are a second-class city. These are our powers and duties of a second-class city, and on the far right are Alaska statute references if you'd like to check those out in more detail. As you can see, under education, that is a power that a second-class city is not allowed to provide. The rest of them are pretty much provided for by Alaska statute. As we go through these slides, you'll notice that most of the things that are allowed in the other types of government are allowed with the second-class city. You'll see the posters on the wall over there if you want to take more time to look at those individually, or floated, come on in and look through some of the different powers of the different types of city organizations. Anybody have any questions about where we are today with the second class city? So why would we look to change? Are we concerned about what Hoonah is doing this year in their efforts to form a borough? Do we want to control our own school? And do we want any additional powers that maybe a second class city doesn't provide? So a first class city, as you can see, pretty much can provide any power not prohibited by law. Now that's a pretty general statement, and the table that follows this slide will show you specifically. But as you read through this, you can see it's pretty broad. One of the areas you'll see about a first-class city, and it applies to a second-class city, if it becomes part of a borough, and the borough wants to take on the same power that the city already has, the borough would be able to take over that power. Now, the borough assembly could give that power back to the city if they wanted to. But as a general rule, you'll see down there that if we have a power with the city, and a borough is formed, the city becomes part of that borough, the borough would have the authority for that power. So here's a first-class city table. As you can see, education is and must provide for that service. In addition, you'll see on this slide, that you didn't see on the second-class city, is the bottom line there, the ability to attain a home rule status. A second-class city cannot do that, but a first-class city could.
What is home rule?
Well, home rule is going to be toward the end of the presentation. It's like the last slide. If it was a simple answer, I would have given that. It's not, of course. The rest of the government organization is pretty much the same, with the exception of the mayor. You'll notice that the mayor is elected and may have a different role in determining votes. Where with the second class city, we elect all the members at one time, and then the council selects the mayor.
And the mayor, it's interesting, has a 3-year term in their first class city, whereas ours are 1-year terms.
Yeah.
Because they're independently elected from the city council.
Right.
Tom?
Yes.
There are a couple of examples in our region of first class cities that are not member.
Correct.
Uno.
Uno is a good one, yeah. There's a list, if you go to the Local Boundary Commission website, you can find all the different first class, second class, home rule, first and second class boroughs. Good. And then the other option for this discussion was a second class borough. Now there's a first class borough, and I think they still have the third class borough. But you can see here, there's a little bit different structure there. You'll see that the election of the assembly is flexible, it isn't fixed, and you'll also see the same types of things with the mayor that you saw in the first class.
Maybe it's important to explain to people aren't familiar with what their borough is, a little bit more like a county government in that it covers a much bigger area and may include multiple municipalities, cities within it. It has more or broader area-wide powers over a bigger area. And in fact, our city can't be much bigger than we are right now. We actually tried to have larger boundaries when we were formed, but we would have to be a borough to incorporate a large amount of area around us that doesn't have people in it.
And Lincoln addresses, but I believe the city has to be limited to its commerce area.
Right.
To support
its populated area.
Can you explain the two differences between the second class borough and the first class borough so we don't have to read all of this? Just what you said, there were a couple things that made a difference.
No, I think if that's all right, I'll let Lynn address the first class borough difference. I've got a cheat sheet in front of me. I don't want to provide any bad information there. So we'll come back to that if that's all right.
All right.
Okay, and then the last type of government is a home rule government, also known as Dillon's Rule. Here's the definition of Dillon's Rule. You can see that it pretty much says as long as the charter provides specifics in what it wants to have for powers, it will be allowed to do that, as long as it's not prohibited by law. Language like granted in express words, necessarily implied, or necessarily incident to the powers expressly granted. So it's very specific.
Any examples in our region of home rule?
Again, Lynn could probably be more specific to the...
home rule cities, Cordova, Fairbanks, Kenai, Ketchikan, Kodiak, Nenana, North Pole, Palmer, Seward, Valdez. And then there are a number of organized boroughs, unified municipalities that are home rule.
And I'm sure Lynn will be able to expand on that if you have more questions specific to them. So these were the bullets that I took out of the home rule sections. As you can see, they're kind of scattered around Alaska statute. One thing you might notice is that a second class city cannot be a home rule form of government.
Who establishes the charter? Is that written by the citizens, or is it something from the legislature?
No, it would be written by the citizens, by the community.
Sort of design your own government.
Right. Again, it needs to be specific. You'll see it says, it has language like liberal construction to be given to the powers and functions of that municipality. So when they're looking at, you know, what is allowed for them to have, they take a very broad approach to granting those powers. And I think you saw it back with the Dillon's Rule definition that the charter is going to be very specific in the way it describes what it is the city or borough would offer. I don't want to steal all of Lynn's thunder there, so I'm going to leave it until we have more specific questions so she can provide some input on exactly the different aspects. Home rule is a little, it's more simple, but it's more, to me, it's more complicated to understand in context of forming the government.
So, Tom, is it correct to say that if it's not, if a city is not home rule, then it agrees to follow what statute says?
They call it general law.
General law. So the state statutes are very specific about what cities can and can't do. And if you're not a home rule city, you just agree to what the law says. But if you're a home rule city, then you get to make up your own rules to the degree that you don't do anything against what the law says. Make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So then, the big question is, what are the powers you'd like to see for Gustavus? Again, we go back to what we already have with the second-class city. If you compare those are the two posters on the left there, you can see that a lot of those are duplicate powers. Lynn, would you like to add something to that presentation?
Yeah, I actually just kind of wrote down your questions as you went. Do you want me to just kind of go through it?
That would be great.
Is this an okay? Okay, great. So I just wanted to say, first off, you're not talking about third-class boroughs anyway, but those are not allowed anymore. So you're right to just focus on the sort of second-class and first-class boroughs. We have a powers and duties of organized boroughs handout that compares the differences between a home rule borough, a first-class borough, and a second-class borough. I can send that to you. I'm kind of looking at it right now. It has a lot to do with, like, what needs to go to the voters. There are more things that the assembly can decide in a first-class borough, whereas in a second-class borough, there's kind of more things that would have to go to the vote of the people in order to be decided. Let's see. Yeah, that's a lot of it that I'm seeing here. But I would encourage you, I can email this to you, and I would encourage you to, you know, distribute this to anyone who's curious about the difference. Honestly, there aren't a ton of differences between them, but there are a handful that are pretty important. Someone had also asked, what other first-class cities are there in Southeast outside of boroughs? And those are Pelican, Hoonah, Cake, Heidelberg, Kluwak, and Craig. I think that's it. Let's see. Any questions about that so far?
Nope, you're good.
So just to clarify on that difference between the general law and home rule, and everything you said was absolutely right, but just to give a little more context, Alaska statute, Title 29, the citation is 2910-200, is a list of limitation of home rule powers. That is basically a list of everything in Title 29 that a home rule municipality has to follow. You have to do these things even though you have a charter. Everything else in Title 29, if you're home rule, you can kind of do it how you want to, as long as it's not violating some other law. So it basically means, you know, you as a second-class city, you have to follow Title 29. You have to follow the whole book. But if you are home rule, you have much more flexibility, and you use your charter to specify this is how we're going to do things, and you kind of compare the charter to this list of home rule limitations just to make sure that you're still in line with Title 29, but you have far more flexibility about how you operate things. And we have actually just recently completed a model borough model city charter, which the last one that was completed by our division was done in 94. So we were really excited to get that done. There was a lot of updating we needed. That is online, and I can get you the link for that. You don't have to follow it. It's just kind of saying, because it's hard to write those things. It's a lot. So it's just sort of giving you an example of what it can look like. It also includes a link to every other charter in Alaska. So I can send you a link to that so that anyone who is interested in creating a charter can look at that. If Gustavus were to go in the direction of trying to reclassify as a first-class city, you can at the same time submit a charter to the LBC, and you can make both of those things happen at the same time. Soldotna, for instance, was already a first-class city. They recently went through the process of becoming home rule, and they did not have to go through the LBC because they were already first-class. So they just had their own vote as a city. But if you're not already first-class and you want to become first-class and you also want to become home rule, you can go through the LBC process and do both of those things at the same time. And I think that covers all the questions that I caught, but I'm happy to answer other questions if you have others.
Wendy, did you have some others, or did that?
No, it's all okay right now.
Okay. Yes.
Currently, will the Local Boundary Commission entertain a petition for a first-class city without a coincident boroughization of that city like ours? We're currently in the unauthorized borough.
In the unorganized borough, if the city of Gustavus decided that it wanted to petition the LBC to become a first class city or a home rule city, we would absolutely look at that petition. There's a really long process involved with that, but the first step is just getting a petition in the door. And I think off the top of my head, Gustavus generally meets the requirements to get in the door. You're over 400, is that correct, in population?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's one of the toughest hurdles that a lot of communities see, is that the population isn't high enough.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Lynn, could you touch on the, since you brought up the population requirement, I know that it recommends that to form a borough there's at least 1,000 full-time residents, but there's been some exceptions like Yakutat and Skagway. Can you talk a little bit about possibilities and opportunities of that?
Yes, absolutely. That is actually in our regulations. I don't know if reading the citation would be helpful at all, but the citations the regulations basically say when looking at a new borough, the LBC wants to make sure that the community and the population is sufficient to meet all the requirements of having a borough to provide all of the services, that you have a sufficient enough population to do that. So what the regulations basically say is that we're going to assume that a minimum of 1,000 permanent residents is required or is necessary in order to run a borough, unless you convince us otherwise, unless specific and persuasive facts are presented showing that a lesser number is adequate, is the specific language. So that certainly doesn't mean you can't become a borough if you don't have 1,000 people. It just the bar is a little bit higher. You need to be able to show the LBC that, yes, we do have what it takes here. We have sufficient people to operate this borough, even though we only have, 600 or 700 or whatever it is. And I think it's possible that Yakutat actually became a borough before that requirement was put in regs, but I think it was after. I'm not positive on the timing exactly.
So with Skagway, was it because of the revenues they received from the cruise ship that helped demonstrate they had the capability of being a borough?
You know, that is a really good question, and I don't know the answer to it exactly because I haven't read through all the documents, but I think we have all the documentation, and that's something if Gustavus or anyone else was thinking about becoming a borough and, you know, wasn't meeting that 1,000 permanent resident sort of recommendation, I think it would be a really good idea to read through the petition, the reports, and the decision pertaining to other boroughs who had successfully met that requirement. So I can definitely get that kind of stuff to you.
The taxable value of a railroad.
I'm sorry, we had somebody else online?
Oh, I apologize. I was just observing Skagway has the taxable value of a privately owned railroad.
Yeah.
Okay. And who do we have online with us?
This is Jesse Keel.
Oh, okay. Thought it was you, Jesse, but I wasn't sure if I recognized the voice.
Came in right at 6. I've been listening attentively.
Great. Yes,
sure. With regard to the petition reports and decisions from other boroughs, are they available online?
Some of them are available online. We are in the process. Every day I try to get another couple up online as we go. If I can send the link to the website where you can find those, and then if you're looking for something that's not there, just send me an email, and I'll send you whatever I have. Unfortunately, the older the boundary change, the fewer documents we have. We're still trying to find all that older stuff, but we will definitely look and see what we have. And I think we do have quite a bit of documentation from both Skagway and Yakutat. So if it's not already online, just send me an email and I'll send you what I have.
I've looked at their on their website. They have a petition link that you can go to, and Gustavus's annexations on it, for example. There's a lot of good information there. Leslie?
Thinking about the topic of Huna possibly doing a borough that might include us. If we are already a borough, can another borough annex us?
So, most likely, if we were to try and form a borough, the recommendation would be that we would include the other communities within our boundaries. As you may have heard, Huna wanted to donut hole or cut us out of their borough, us and Pelican. Whether or not that would get support from the local boundary commission, is unknown. Lynn might be able to speak to that. But if we were to form a borough, I'm sure the same type of standard or approach would be applied to us. Do you want to talk to that at all, Lynn?
Sure. I have to say just straight up, I am staff to the local boundary commission. The ultimate decision lies with the actual local boundary commission, and I cannot predict what they would do. So just putting that straight out there. I really would encourage everyone to look at the standards that are in regulations, because that's what we look at. I do a report. You know, once we're well into the petition process, I do a report with recommendations. That report is based on the petition. It's based on public comments. It's based on briefs. It's based on research. And primarily, we are looking at these standards. Does this borough incorporation meet all of these standards? That's where that 1,000 permanent resident thing came from. That's one of the standards. And I really encourage you to look at those standards, and whether you're looking at, you know, responding to a Huna borough or forming your own borough, you would build either your own petition or your public comment or briefs based on, you know, whether you think they meet those standards, and building an argument around that. I can say I don't know what Huna's, you know, proposed boundaries are at this point. I haven't seen anything. But if you're saying they're talking about forming a donut hole, my mind immediately thinks of the enclaves. The regulations and the standards specifically prohibit enclaves. And that might be something that you would want to note when you are, for instance, responding to the Huna borough or, you know, trying to form your own borough. That's just one example. But I encourage you, it's hard for me to say either way because I'm not the local boundary commission. I can't predict how they would go in the end. I make recommendations, but I'm not the one that makes the decision. I just encourage you to really look at those standards closely and kind of use those to guide your decisions, your public comments, you know, your own petition, whatever you decide to do.
Question, Lynn, this is Mike Taylor, council. As I understand it, of course, if HUNA included us as within their boundaries and intended for us to be part of the borough of the original, we would be in on the original vote along with all the other folks in the proposed borough boundary. But if they formed a borough without us and then later attempted to annex us to their borough, what say would we have at that point? Do we have an opportunity within our own city to reject that? Or is it once again a vote of everybody in the whole borough so we could be brought in even if we didn't want to be?
Right. So any, you know, assuming that a petition got all the way through our process and that the local boundary commission approved it, at that point it would either go to legislative review, in which case basically the legislature would make a decision, or it would go to the vote of the people. In the case of a borough, I believe it is the total population of the total area included in the borough boundaries that vote. In the case of annexation, say the borough already exists, the HUNA borough, and they're trying to annex the area around Gustavus, including Gustavus, if that went to the vote of the people, then both the population of the borough of HUNA would have to, a majority of them would have to approve, and a majority of the city of Gustavus, the area they were trying to annex, would also have to approve.
So, in other words, we would have the be in a position to reject being annexed if we didn't wish
by
to
a
be.
Vote. Yes,
right.
By a vote. Yes,
by a vote.
Legislative review also exists, but in order for them to do an annexation by legislative review, we have some kind of additional standards that they would have to meet. Yeah, so it could go either way, but if they did go to the vote of the people, yes, the area they were trying to annex would have the right to vote themselves. Now, if they were trying to annex an area that didn't have a population, it would definitely go through a legislative review, but because there's no one to vote in that case. But if it's an area that does have a population, such as Gustavus, it would, you know, if it did go to the vote, then that area would have to approve by a majority.
And what happens if HUNA proposes to try to annex or to include in their borough Excursion Inlet, which is now in Haines borough?
They have a whole other set of standards they would have to meet to do that, because what they would have to do is detach. It's not, you can't just annex. So, you know, a city can't just annex another city. A borough can't just annex another borough. First, you have to detach that area from that other borough or from that other city. They have to meet all of those detachment standards as well as the annexation standards. And I believe in that case, because of the annexation involved, there would still have to be a vote there as well. I don't have the detachment standards memorized off the top of my head, because we don't see it quite as often. But I can look that up in terms of figuring out, you know, does Haines actually have to vote for the detachment? I'm not positive about that, so I'll have to look into that a little bit closer.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Lynn. Sure.
Shelley.
Hi, Lynn. This is Shelley. When you say standards, do you mean regulations? Or is it a separate set of standards?
Yes, no, the regulations. That's exactly right. In the regulations, you'll see, like, Article 2 standards for incorporation of boroughs is a part of the regulations, so that's what I'm referring to. It's the standards that are within the regulations. Yes.
Lynn, this is Susan Warner. Question about if Gustavus chose to become a first-class city, would we have the opportunity to expand our boundaries, our city boundaries? Or is
it only
a borough that can expand their boundaries?
Your standards for an annexation are, I'm pretty sure they're the same for a first or a second class city. And you certainly can expand your, you know, cities annex all the time. Soldotna is talking about an annexation right now. You know, I just finished loading documentations about a city of Ketchikan annexation from a couple years ago. So you can certainly attempt an annexation. I can't think of any reason it would be easier or harder to do as a first versus a second class city. I could think about that. I can't really think off the top of my head of why that would be easier as a first class city.
Okay, great. And one more question. There is in statute some language about for encouraging unorganized boroughs to organize of a reward stipend for organizing.
Oh. I know what you're referring to.
Yeah, is that still in effect and funded, or is it just on the books and hasn't been actually funded of late?
No, it is funded. It's 29.5, 180, and 190. It's called organizational grants to cities and organizational grants to boroughs. And it is the last incorporation we had was the city of Whale Pass, and they were granted that organizational grant to the city. I will say the amount has not been increased since 1994-ish. So it's $50,000 plus another $25,000 the following year, I think. But yes, that is something that exists.
And where could I find out about how much that actually is funded at?
It's been funded at the amount that's in statute. So if you check out Alaska Statute 29.05.180 and 190, it has the amounts that it's being funded at. And the last incorporations that have happened were funded at that amount that's in there. Those were Whale Pass, Edna Bay, and I believe the Petersburg Borough was the last borough. They were all funded at the amount that's cited in statute. Like I said, it's just that the amount in statute hasn't been increased for a long time, and the legislature would actually have to pass a bill to increase that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I thought the statute said like $300,000 the first
year. That's education.
Oh, that's education.
That's for a borough.
That's for a borough.
Yes.
Not for a city.
Right, that is for a borough incorporation. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for a borough incorporation, it's $300,000 the first year, $200,000 the second year?
Yep, exactly, and another $100,000 the third year.
Okay.
And I want to say there was something. Here we go. Okay, under 180B, if you reclassify as a first-class city, there is a $50,000 organizational grant as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Sure.
Did you have a question? Tom, could you go to your last slide again?
Maybe.
That's it. I think that's it.
This one here?
Yeah. Okay. So that, on its face, sounds like a pretty positive, simple question. But it seems, from what we've heard tonight, that it's a little more complicated than that. You know, there are multiple questions like that can be separate. Do we want to change our city status? Do we want to change our borough status? And another way of stating this particular question of what powers do we want is what responsibilities do we want, and how do we pay for those? So I think that's kind of stuff we're
going
to have to talk about.
Yeah, so recognize that the purpose of the meeting was to have that discussion, just provide information back and forth. Having Lynn on the phone, you know, as a representative of a local boundary commission, helps us understand some of those complexities, just as you had mentioned. So again, I think this is that first step in a conversation, if we wanted to take any steps, if we were concerned about HUNA, if we wanted to do something about having our own school versus being part of ARIA. Yeah, Whitney?
Lynn, this is a question for you, perhaps. Is there pressure from the state to change organizational structure of the unorganized borough folks?
I have not received any pressure or heard of any pressure. The local boundary commission makes its decisions based on what, you know, the standards are. Back in the late 60s, right after statehood, the legislature did pass a mandatory boroughs act, which created several boroughs. There have been actions by the only other actions by the local boundary commission to create boroughs have been things like, you know, we've been directed by the legislature to create the model borough boundaries, to study more recently, to study which borough or which areas might meet the standards of becoming a borough. So for studies and things like that, LBC staff has been involved in studies. LBC staff and the LBC itself, as far as I'm aware, has never received pressure to actually try to create boroughs out of the unorganized borough. That has really, I mean, as far as I'm aware, would really just come from the legislature itself, because the LBC follows statute and follows regulation, which is not designed to force boroughs to happen. It's more designed to, you know, have standards for making that decision.
Have any of those boroughability studies been done for areas of northern southeast?
Yes, and I can send the most recent one to you. I think it was done in 2006. I'd be happy to send it your way, and I can't remember if that one split. So that would have been before the Petersburg Borough formed and possibly before the Wrangell Borough. I can't remember. But I think that it basically split the what was of this of Southeast Alaska, what was still in the unorganized borough. It basically split it in half and kind of considered the northern half and the southern half, or it had some sort of a split like that. I would be more than happy to send you that study. I assume I can just send this kind of stuff to Tom, and Tom can distribute it to people who are interested. Is that all right?
You bet, Lynn. Yes.
I have a question for Lynn. I heard you say something a couple times, and just want to repeat back to you what I think I heard you say. Because there's some concern that Gustavus could become part of HUNA. There is some fear, I guess, of that. So, but I think I heard you say that if that attempt was made either by a request to the Boundary Commission to include Gustavus into their borough, or by a later annexation, in both cases, the Gustavus folks would have a vote. And the way that I heard you describe that is that HUNA would have to approve it by majority, and Gustavus would have to approve it by a majority. If that's correct, then as long as we have a majority and Gustavus don't approve it, then that couldn't happen. Am I correct about that?
That is for annexation. For an annexation, the area that a borough is trying to annex has to approve, that area has to approve by a majority. So if a borough was attempting to annex, you know, the area that includes Gustavus, then the borough would have to approve by a majority vote, and Gustavus would have to approve by its own majority vote. That's only in an annexation, though. In the borough incorporation stage, it would be a majority of the total votership of that entire area that was being proposed for incorporation.
Okay, thanks.
So, Lynn, this is Mike Taylor again to follow up on Lee Parker's question. In the if HUNA in forming their borough attempted or decided to include Gustavus in the borough, they would be running the risk that a heavy no vote in Gustavus would sink their whole borough. We would be running the risk that we didn't have enough votes to stay out of it if we don't want to be here. But they would be at risk in losing their whole borough proposal by including us if we, along with a few others in HUNA, voted no on the borough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's accurate because it would be the vote of the total area. Mm-hmm. And there are points at which stages in the process at which the people in Gustavus have opportunity to express, you know, how they feel about being included in those boundaries as well. During, like I said, the public comment period, anyone can submit a public comment. There are certain entities that can also submit briefs. Those are all considered when staff does their report and when the LBC makes their final decision. So there are a lot of steps along the way where Gustavus, in that scenario, would have an opportunity to have their voices heard. And that would all be considered in that final decision. But yes, ultimately, if they went through the vote of the people, it would be a vote of the total area.
Jesse, are you still there?
Yes, yes, indeed.
Could you speak to the discussions, I hate to use the word rumors, about consolidation of school districts and the desire to limit or eliminate RIAs?
Well, you know, I think that the driving force behind those discussions is the state budget and the governor's stated desire to cut it deeply. He has said $600 million next year. He has said $800 million over the next 2 years. You can't get there without dramatically reducing what you spend on K-12. Folks who are interested in doing that have looked at things like raising the minimum school size to qualify as a separate school for the funding formula. Or there is actually a bill submitted, and I think withdrawn or at least not pushed this year, to consolidate school districts pretty drastically. Right now there are, I want to say 54, including Mount Edgecombe, might be off by one. And the bill was to go to 18. The fascinating question with that, of course, is that you'll almost certainly, if you were to try and do that, have to include areas that are currently in rural education attendance areas along with municipal school districts that have a required local effort, which is to say cash out of local coffers to pay for part of the schools. It's a complex thing. It would require rewriting the K-12 funding formula. There are a couple of reasons that I would certainly oppose that, and I think a lot of folks would. So I think, frankly, what we need to worry most about when it comes to school funding is not the highly complex and contentious process of getting a bill through that rewrites the formula so the same inputs get a much smaller dollar number when you crunch the formula and get your outputs. But much easier is to simply use the pro rata reduction clause and say, rewriting the formula is hard and it takes a lot of votes, but if we just reduce how much money we spend, every district takes it on the chin in roughly proportional measure. That said, I certainly would never promise you that nobody's going to introduce another bad idea. We see them every year. I promise you we'll see some bad ideas this next year. School consolidations is one of those ideas that's kind of a zombie. It never seems to die all the way.
Thank you. Any other questions?
So I've got one more. Susan, again, as far as, you know, there's some concerns about HUNA in their borough proposal being able to annex all the property around Gustavus that isn't part of Gustavus's present city, second-class city boundaries. Is that a potential opportunity in a borough petition?
Is that question for me?
It is for you.
Okay, sorry about that. HUNA or anyone can propose whatever boundaries they would like to propose.
Uh-huh.
After they propose those boundaries, they have to justify them. Those boundaries have to meet the statutes. So that's why after someone made a comment earlier about donuts, I brought up that enclave statute. As soon as I hear that term donut, I think, ooh, you know, they can propose that boundary, but at least when I'm looking at it and writing my report and recommendations, I'm going to be thinking, but does this meet that standard regarding not creating enclaves? The legislature, when it wrote Title 29, said we don't want enclaves to be created when we're forming boroughs, because it basically leaves little pockets of areas that are not in boroughs that might not be able to be a borough themselves. You know, I guess that's just the best example I can think of. But whatever boundaries they create, they have to be able to justify them. And that's where the people have an opportunity to comment, and organizations have the opportunity to submit briefs in order to say, we don't think that these boundaries that have been proposed meet the standards because A, B, C, and D.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Please.
The question, if someone wants to make a borough that includes the northern Icy Straits area, does the Boundary Commission look at that in kind of a negative fashion, that they're going across 20 miles of water to include this portion of land?
That gets into trying to predict what the local Boundary Commission would want to see. The best thing I can say is that the local Boundary Commission wants to see the boundaries meet the standards. So I would really encourage you to look at the standards and again, maybe read past decisions to see how the local Boundary Commission has made decisions in the past about things like that. It's a whole new commission, you know, so they could make different decisions that don't necessarily reflect past decisions. But I still think that's a good place to start, to look at old reports, to look at old decisions. I know I'm just passing a whole bunch of research on to you, but I just can't predict how the LBC would look at something aside from saying the standards are the primary thing that they're looking at.
To partially rephrase that question, maybe, does it in your mind, is there any kind of preference in statute toward a preference for contiguous boundaries?
Yes, actually, I think that word is even in either the statute or the regulations somewhere. And let's see, the standards also, I'm looking for the boundary section right now, the standards also somewhere talk about, they need to consider what's being left behind. So if you're forming a borough, what are your boundaries and what's not in your boundaries? That also needs to be considered, because like I said, the goal of the legislation is to see areas be able to be in a borough and not necessarily to leave enclaves or areas that couldn't support a borough because of the boundaries that were created. So these are all things that get considered. And I do encourage you to look specifically at 110.060 at boundaries, at the whole boundaries section for that. This is one of the longer sections, and it does talk about a lot of that kind of stuff that we're talking about here. Encourages the LBC to consider things like land use and ownership patterns, ethnicity and cultures, existing and reasonably anticipated transportation patterns, natural geographical features. There's just tons more. So all of those things should be considered. and might, you know, barring I can't actually tell you, ultimately what would happen, these are the standards that they're supposed to be following. So I just encourage you to really look closely at those.
Related again to that, and maybe you can't give any more answer to my question either than you did the previous two. When HUNA proposed their borough boundaries in several years ago, and the last time they started this process, they included all the fairweather grounds with the idea of taxing fish out there regardless of where it was landed. It appeared to me that their boundaries went outside of the state boundary and maybe even outside of the federal 12-mile limit. Are there any boroughs that go out offshore beyond the state boundary?
Yes, Yakutat does. However, they have no authority outside of those boundaries, and I couldn't posit a guess for why the boundaries go all the way out there, but they have, you know, the boundaries go there, but it doesn't actually make any difference for them because it's outside of the state boundaries. They have no authority.
What would happen if, so, nautical miles?
Hello?
Sorry,
you got cut off. Could you start over again? I'm so sorry.
Sure. The 3 nautical miles off of Glacier Bay to Sea Otter Creek is within Parks jurisdiction. Would HUNA have any rights implicit of it being federal waters?
No, federal waters such as those can still be within a borough's boundaries. It just changes what you can do with it. It changes your taxing authority. It changes... there's a lot of things that it changes in terms of what the borough can actually do in that area or with that area, but that area can still be within the boundaries of a borough.
Other questions for Senator Keel or Ben?
One more for Lynn. The city of Gustavus has taxing authority how far out from Bartlett Cove?
Within our boundaries.
Within our boundaries, which is go how far out into Bartlett Cove? It's into the water, right?
Yeah.
Can another borough proposal annex what's in an existing taxable authority of a separate governmental unit?
Oh.
Through a borough proposal?
No, there is something in regulations, and I would have to think about where I found that, but there is somewhere in regulations there is language that basically says you can't cut up a city. So a city can't be partially in one borough and partially in another borough, or, you know, partially in a borough and partially in the unorganized borough. The city boundaries have to be all within the same borough. Does that answer that question?
That does answer that question. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah. And I don't remember where that is. I would have to look that up. But it's right here. Yeah, it's under boundaries. It's down in subsection F. Boundaries of a borough may not include only a portion of the territory of an existing city.
Excellent. Thank you.
We're a second-class city. And so we have all the powers of a second-class city. And it seems to me, am I correct, that the only function that we can't have that we could potentially or conceivably want to have as a second-class city that would require a change of government is to run the school?
You mean for a first-class city?
Say again?
Go ahead.
A first-class city or even a city borough, the only additional function that we would gain the capability of offering that we don't already have now is to run the school.
Planning and all of that nightmare.
We can do that as a second-class city.
You may. Yeah.
We may.
You have.
So we can add a lot of functions if we wanted to. We don't have to.
don't necessarily want to. Nope.
Carefully.
We can add planning and platting and land use regulations and lots of other powers as a second-class city without changing to a first-class city or to a borough. One thing we can't do is have the school district. So does that sound correct?
We'd have a different
form of council.
Different form of council and mayor and all that. But as far as powers, things that we can do, authorities that we can take, responsibilities that we can take, the school is the only difference.
So 30 mils for a first-class city,
20
for a second.
So that would, there are differences in how you can tax and
so forth. So you're right. The rest is the same.
So if we're designing, if we're thinking about what kind of city we want to be and what kinds of powers, as you ask at the end, what kind of powers do we want, we can do essentially everything except the school without changing our form of government.
Is that a question to her?
Well, no, I think she...
And are you then obligated to also...
I think that slide 5 kind of answers most of those questions.
If we have the school district, we have to do, create the whole thing.
K-12,
You couldn't just say that kids have to go to Mount Edgecombe for high school?
No, I don't. Good question. I don't know.
Could you instead... I don't know what a charter school really is relative to a public school or establish a private school.
We want to be providing a service like a Montessori or a private school.
I'm just, you know, if really it's because of education, I'm wondering if there's another box we can consider.
Yeah. If there are other ways to do it without changing the... In other words, to deal with it, I'm trying to improve the school without changing the form of government.
Because adding planning, plotting, and land use regulations is, I would imagine, another big thing that we'd have to chew off.
And law enforcement.
Were you saying law enforcement was a...
It's a requirement of a first-class city, isn't it?
No, I don't see that as a requirement. You tend to see it more in a lot of communities just because a first-class city is frequently larger than second-class cities, not always. But, no, that's not a required power.
Houston doesn't have maybe first-class.
Okay.
And Ketchikan Borough doesn't have law enforcement. They rely on the troopers. Any other questions? Yes or no? Panel, any questions? Any other?
I have no more questions. I don't have any questions.
Any comments?
Just thank you, Lynn. It's been really, really helpful being able to talk to you tonight, and Jesse too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll send some of these documents probably on Monday, if that's okay. Just let me know if there's anything else I can help with.
I'd like to know if anybody in the audience has a view on whether the issues with the school are sufficient for us to change our form of government.
How much do this new school cost to run?
So in 2017, Gustavus School cost $1.2 million.
And what is our taxable income right now?
Our taxable revenue?
How much do we...
Sales tax.
$448,000.
So we need another...
Million.
Million plus. $1.25 million on top of... We need more than double what we already did.
The state still provides the base funding, right?
Right.
I don't know, maybe Lynn or Jesse can confirm what
for once you, if you do have your own school district, how much do you then get from the state? There's a formula for that.
Right, that's what you're talking about.
There is a formula, and it'll cross your eyes, but I'm happy to walk through it with you if you like. Here's the nutshell version of the way required local contribution, sometimes called required local effort, works now. It is the minimum that a municipality that is a school district has to put in is the equivalent of 2.65 mils on all the taxable property within that municipality. Now, it doesn't matter if you tax that property or not, and it does not say that you must use property tax to come up with it. And I'll point you to Unalaska Dutch Harbor, which doesn't have a property tax. They do have a school district. They've got so much fish tax that they use that money. But the most common way that Alaska municipalities do that is they come up with a required local contribution through some portion of their mill rate. So somebody would have to go roughly assess the real property, the planes and boats that are present in Gustavus on January 1, and whatever else is taxable property, and then take 2.65 mils. That would be the minimum tab that Gustavus would, if it became a higher order municipality and ran the school district, would have to put in. You're permitted to put in significantly more, and there's a calculation for how much more your cap is, and it's a lot.
But then the state also contributes to the budget of the school, doesn't it?
Yeah, the shortest way to describe that without putting everybody to sleep is that the state counts the kids and runs through a complicated formula, and they come up with a dollar amount, and that's called the basic need. The municipality puts in the required local contribution, and that just one-to-one reduces what the state puts in to meet basic need, right? So the equivalent of 2.65 mils starts filling that that basic need box for education. The state tops it up to the basic need that comes out of the formula. And actually, after the meeting earlier this week, my staff and I are working with the Department of Education to just sort of just ballpark what that calculation would look like for the purposes of information so that people in Gustavus can see those numbers. We're not pushing anybody in any direction. We're just providing info. So we will get that to you as soon as we've got something that the Department of Education looks at and says, you're in the zone. I don't want to give you anything that's wildly off because I missed a factor.
That would be really helpful.
Yeah. It could be anywhere up to 1.2 million. Conceivably, if we had enough property value here, we could have to pay the whole 1.2 million.
Now, does that 1.2 million also include the cost of the superintendent, the central office, and all the other things?
Just the school.
Yeah, just the school. But if we had a school, that's only a piece of it, 1.2 mil.
But also recognize the school's cost is going to depend on the menu of services you want to provide. Do you want to have a athletic travel budget? That's $60,000. You know, I mean, you pick and choose how you design that.
Right, but there's also requirements in statute about having to have superintendents and all
teachers.
And all sorts of other people associated with the administration of a school. You don't just pay for the school.
Well, I don't know if you need a superintendent for a single school. For a district, you would.
Yeah, for a district. Which, if you had a borough, you would.
I think. If you take a look at some of our neighbors on Prince of Wales, I believe there are two districts sharing a superintendent now. They have a contract, an agreement between them. I heard somebody say something that I do want to correct, which is that under no circumstance, the way the formula reads today, would a municipality be on the hook for the full amount. There is actually an alternate for those few municipalities that have a huge taxable value, and that would be like the North Slope Borough with all that oil and gas infrastructure and a few people. actually Skagway because of that railroad, Valdez because of the pipeline terminal. So their required local effort is 45% of the basic need calculation. So if this Davis has a whole lot more potentially taxable property than I'm aware of, you couldn't get up to 1.2 million or the full basic need. Your required local effort caps out at 45% of that basic need. And as I say, I know there are four school districts, North Slope Borough, Skagway, Valdez, oh, on Alaska, three full-size fish plants and 985 people. Told you I could cross your eyes.
Good stuff.
That's really helpful.
Yeah.
Are there additional ways we could collect money for First Class City or a borough that we can't now?
There are additional ways that we can collect money that we're not now without changing our form of government. So we wouldn't...
Bless you.
Yeah. Because we... All the
we
way up...
We can do a property tax, for example.
Mm-hmm. We can now,
yeah.
We don't.
We do not, yes,
but we
could as a second class.
Yeah, we're allowed to.
But are there ways that we can't now that we could collect money?
I don't think so.
There'd be a difference in the limitation. We could collect more as a first class city.
Yeah, I think Skagway's mill is 9 point, I think Jesse said 9.5 or 9.75. That seems pretty high. I think Ketchikan's is 9.2, the city. That's, think of 30, man. Wow.
Yeah.
What does it 9 mil mean? If a person has a value of $100,000?
So it's $100 per 100,000, I believe. Is that right, Jesse?
10 mils is 1% of the property value. So a mil is a tenth of a percent. So 9 mils, $100,000 of value, it's a $900 bill.
Any other questions, comments? Panel? Well, thanks, Senator Keel and Lynn. Really appreciate your participation and all the good information.
Absolutely, anytime.
Happy to help any way I can and provide whatever data is useful to the community.
All right, I'm going to sign this off.
All right, have a good
night.
Thank you.